Hey, this is Brian from Geek Pop. You can listen to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, on our website, geekpoppodcast.wordpress.com. You can also catch us streaming live on Twitch at geek_pop. And if you miss a stream, you can catch our past streams on YouTube at Geek Pop Podcast. Don't forget to like and share us on Facebook. Popping your geek every week.
Did you guys happen to see the... They released the new pictures for the Aladdin movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you guys...
became a weekly spread.
Right? I mean, let's be honest here. Aladdin, Jasmine, Jafar, they all look fine. The real issue here is, what do you guys think of the genie?
I dug his look.
Yeah, he looked like a freaking genie, right?
Oh, are people outraged?
People are not too happy.
No. I don't know. I'm not outraged, but I don't like it.
Would people have
rather... But I think I need to see the performance to really then... deal with
that. I want to wait till the trailer comes out to even really give a judge of it. But at the same time, they also made an announcement saying that he's only going to be in human form for a short period of time.
He will
guaranteed be blue, and he will be CG for most of it.
That's what I was about to ask. Like, what are people angry about? Are people saying that he should be blue because he doesn't?
He doesn't have to be blue.
No.
People are ragging on
black
like,
man. He can just look like a black guy.
They're like, he looks like Kazam.
Because of genie.
He looks like Shaq.
I think it's kind of fucked up because what is your basis for that? Just because he's black?
No,
he has the same beard.
Kazam.
He did Kazam. It just the outfit to me looks very similar to the outfit from that.
Yeah,
that's literally it.
Also, like I don't know that much about genie lore, but isn't traditionally a genie supposed to just look like a guy?
Yeah,
like he doesn't necessarily have to be a big. I know the Disney cartoon obviously.
Traditionally,
I'm
gonna fuck this up. So I'm just gonna say an Asian, Middle Eastern.
Person.
Lore. Look like a person, right?
You know, lore. So traditionally, that's what he'll look like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Someone from that region.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I don't think.
He can. I mean, there are probably black people
black
in that region.
Definitely falls in that, that category, in my opinion.
I kind of like that the few pictures in Entertainment Weekly of like Agrabah shows like it's a very culturally diverse, but of the region, you know, so you see a lot of. Like when you see the shots of Aladdin and Jasmine in the Agrabah kind of vendors, you see like there's black people, there's Asian people because it's nearby.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. I mean in the original story, if I'm not mistaken, Aladdin is Chinese. If I'm not wrong,
Really?
I had no idea.
I'm pretty sure.
Like in the original Arabian Nights, like
I believe that Arabian Nights was the Ali Baba.
1001 Arabian Nights.
Yeah. So the original story, I'm pretty sure Aladdin was Chinese. He was the son of a vendor. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. It's been a while. It's been a long while.
Sure.
Probably 20-something years. I could be wrong. I don't
makes
know.
Sense. There was lots of trading going on, and you know, especially, I mean, hell, the Middle East was once. You know, it's where civilization started.
Yeah.
So I started in Mesopotamia. And
I don't know. People just be like, I don't know if I will smell. I don't know if I like the ponytail. That's about the only thing.
And I hate that haircut. Like, that's just.
I think it's
a mean.
As someone who has rocked that hairstyle throughout his life, it looked a little funny.
I didn't see. Well, I only saw the cover photo where it's just him straight on. But are you talking about the things on top of his head?
Yeah.
I kind of dig it.
Big ass ponytail.
Yeah, it looks like he was Asian. Yeah. I mean Asian, Chinese.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, then hell.
Yeah, he's the son of a deceased Chinese tailor.
Yeah,
his
tailor.
His mother is a poor widow.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought I said a merchant, but I knew it was something like
well,
that.
I mean, a tailor sells things, so he could be a merchant.
Anyway, and by the way... Big Chris,
Lisa,
Brian,
Enrique.
Either way, I'm looking forward, and I've seen the behind the scenes of some of the Aladdin footage. I'm with it. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
I haven't seen any behind the scenes footage, but I mean, I want to see at least how he would act.
There's a snippet of behind the scenes footage of the actors talking about the movie, and it's like 30 seconds. I don't know if they released it yesterday or today, but it's, you know, Aladdin jumping from windows and stuff like that, which. You know, I don't think they're going to keep this. Well, maybe they will keep the song. That's one of my favorite songs in the movie.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, one jump ahead of the bread line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One skip ahead of my doom.
It's one of my favorite songs, too, yeah.
It's fucking good, man.
It's a good song.
I feel like we probably already talked about this, but have they confirmed whether or not it's a musical? Or they're just incorporating some of the songs into the score.
They just threw two songs at you in the teaser.
Sure,
yeah.
but they're not sung, it's just music, so it could just as easily be part of the score.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, they did, I think, the right thing, which in a not so great movie of Beauty and the Beast, they did the Be Our Guest and the other songs, and it worked more or less fine.
Yeah, it was fine. Just
I did like the Gaston song. I mean,
Gaston's amazing, and that actor is really good. I can't remember his name right now.
Jungle Book didn't really.
No.
It was okay.
But they only have one song.
That's true.
One good song. I don't remember. No, they have two. I'm sorry. They have Bare Necessities.
I want to be like you.
But I don't think they can use. Can't use the original King Louie one because I think there was. And I don't know if it's been settled, but there was a lawsuit with Louie.
Oh
fuck! I can't think of
Armstrong.
It's not Louis Armstrong. There was another singer, Louis something, who they literally based him and his band off of the King Louis.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Disney is, I don't want to say notorious, but they use models and they had people come in and they rotoscoping. No, they probably did that, but
yeah.
They would have live actors come in and they would do some of that, but they'd come in and act out and sketch them and stuff like that. And but there was a lawsuit for a long time because he did that movie and they're like, well, that's all you get to. You can't keep using that character for other stuff in that song and stuff like that. So there was a big debate. That's why you didn't see King Louis for a long time. Fuck, what is that guy? That guy's name? Louis
Le Terrier.
No,
I would look, but I have no clue how to look for that.
Lisa's got it. Tired Lisa is on this. Anyway, the two great songs. But anyway, I hope they include all the good original Latin songs. I'm a fan of literally every song in that movie.
Yeah,
it's like every song is a classic to me.
Sure.
Anything.
I guess that's a big question especially since they also have the live-action Mulan adaptation, and there's plenty of people crying foul that, you know, it's not going to be a musical.
So here's the thing with Mulan, is there's not really as memorable a song besides...
Except for
Make a Man Out of You.
mean, which almost makes up...
Reflection, too.
Yeah, Reflection was good. You got Christina Aguilera's version, too.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't sing more than three bars of that one.
Will my reflection show who I am inside?
is that a ballad for you guys?
Yeah.
Is that one of those ones like,
okay. Yeah. I'm more remembering the Christina Aguilera version than the
I didn't know she did with that.
Yeah, she did. And 98 Degrees, I think, sang on that one, too.
That movie?
I think so.
Well, probably on the soundtrack, like inspired, you know, like a Disney soundtracks. They have there's obviously the character's version of it, or you know, the singing voice of the character's version of it in most cases. But then the album will have
Celine Dion. Do absolutely love the Make a Man Out of You song. That's,
dude, it's one of the greatest.
Let's get down to business. Great song.
To defeat the Huns.
Yeah. I can't remember the rest of them, but that was a really, really good one.
Something about when I asked for daughters. Something about sending me daughters when I asked for sons. You're the something.
All right.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Where the fuck do we? So I don't know. Aladdin. I didn't think it was that newsworthy, just simply because it was a couple of pictures and people already being like, I don't know, but I think it's fine.
Podcasts are great for talking about pictures.
Yeah. By the way, King Louis was based off of the performer Louis Prima.
Prima. That's right. Prima. And his band.
Thank you.
And they're famously like there were one of those bands that literally would go into the crowd of people and they'd shimmy and they'd play their instruments and just like you see in the movie.
Like, and it was like they were clearly using that visual reference and stuff like that. Because that's what they did. I mean that's the style of rotoscoping and like kind of that's a lot of why the animation back then looked so good is that they were literally tracing. Well, but really tracking live action models so closely. That it, you know, which is why notoriously many Disney movies, you do side by side comparisons, are using the same sources for these dances. Like, you know, you see, like, you know, Robin Hood has a lot of the same and animation from Sleeping Beauty, from
Jungle Book,
yeah,
Robin Hood, yeah,
yeah.
And it's just like the thing that they did though too. Like Disney
if
was
it ain't broke, don't
that wasn't
it.
An exclusive thing to Disney.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah.
They
no,
didn't.
That makes it makes perfect sense. I mean, you're making these films and they take a long time, and if you've already got. Someone walking and they're male, like,
do you know
is it important?
Like, modern movies do that too, still.
Yeah.
And, like, we don't ever bat an eye because we don't
I mean, there's, we don't identify. I mean, they even do it with like the Wilhelm scream. Like that's in countless movies. That's just the one thing I can pick off the top of my head.
Well, partly there's also, you know, the question about how much they have right to, because the Wilhelm scream was in the sound library that Ben Bird just sort of stumbled upon and was allowed to use because the studios just have those kind of resources and stuff like that. But like, you know, Disney was obviously reusing a lot of
perfectly
the same
good scream.
Yeah, but like the Disney was obviously reusing a lot of their same references for other things. You know, but at the same time,
do you know how it got its name, by the way?
The Wilhelm
What,
screen?
The Wilhelm? Yeah, it was Private Wilhelm in the charge at Feather River who got shot in the leg.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are like, well, who was this Wilhelm that they used to scream? I forget the credited.
Oh, like
the credited voice actor. Yeah. No, but people misthink that, like, called that, so that must have been the person that recorded, which it wasn't. It was, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. But that reminded me of, like, because it got brought up on QI, and even Stephen Fry was mentioning, oh, you know, the Wilhelm scream that's famous in all these movies, and he mentioned something like, oh, yeah, I don't know, I have no idea what's called Wilhelm. It's like,
what?
I do. If I was there, I could be like, who said
Stephen
this? Stephen Fry, the great intellectual.
The man who knows everything.
And was like, hey. So I was like, hey. I knew something.
Obviously doesn't know.
It's all right. It's a very obscure little. Well, it's not that obscure now.
Everybody, I feel like, if you're a movie fan, like, you know the scream, and you probably, maybe you don't know where it's from. I don't know.
I mean, it's basically why it doesn't appear in Star Wars anymore, because like, I think it was Matt Wood who made that decision of like, you don't hear the Wilhelm in Episode 7 and 8.
You don't.
I'm kind of glad though. I mean, he made it, I mean, because the Wilhelm is so well known now that it pulls you out of the movie, and you can really only use it in a comedic moment.
What do you mean now? Like in the 80s when I heard like,
I know, but still, like, I was still finding people in like the 90s and the aughts kind of going like, dude, you don't know about the Wilhelm? And as soon as they have an ear for it, then they start like, oh my god, it's in everything.
I would say I didn't really get or put together that scream as something that was the same scream until I think it showed up in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then they Peter Jackson did a whole thing with it. And then I was like, oh, okay, that's this whole thing.
Exactly. Peter Jackson found out about it while doing post-production on Two Towers.
Yeah.
So it's not in Fellowship, but
it's
in
Two Towers,
and it's twice in Return of the King. So, but still, it's like, but, you know, back.
How did he just find out about it? I feel like he's one of those directors.
Exactly.
That
he's a huge director. You'd
he's
be like,
from
he
New
know.
Zealand.
But still, like, once upon a time, it used to be you could pass it off as a serious scream in an action scene. Now it's so recognizable that it's almost always only used for comedy because it'll kind of pull you out. Like, there's like in Harold and Kumar, like Harold screams it when he gets knocked off the cheetah. You know, like moments like that. Like,
sure.
Do the
I think there's plenty of movies that still use that scream as part
of the serious scream.
Yeah.
But still, it's like the more famous it is, the more you know, it does pull you out of serious moments. So, hell, it's in like Breaking Bad.
It's in one of the movies that is out right now.
Probably.
At theaters. Oh. Like, I am sure of
probably,
it.
Probably, yeah.
Like, it is probably 90% of action movies, I would guess.
It's in games. It's in Battlefront. I know, like, one of the 100 screams that you scream when you die.
Yeah. You're right. Wait, the second one?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
It definitely
doesn't matter.
Second one.
It doesn't matter. Let's move the fuck on.
Why are we so
fucking stupid?
We haven't gotten to any of our talk.
Okay.
let's talk about a movie that doesn't have the Wilhelm scream, but
that we remember.
I don't think it did.
I don't think it did.
Also, I did not hear.
But I did miss two scenes, so I could.
Yeah. You missed two scenes.
I know.
But Brian was sick.
Enrique put in a spoiler warning.
Blindfold on. Mama always asking, where did I go wrong? What's up, danger?
Of course, Enrique. The following contains spoilers for Spider-Man Enters the Spider-Verse. To continue spoiler-free, skip ahead to 51 minutes and 56 seconds.
Talk to yourself.
Thank you, Enrique. Enrique, you want to take it from here?
Good job, Enrique.
You talking about yourself in the third person?
Yeah.
It's a different Enrique. We have two Enriques. One edits and one is on the show.
He's from a different
universe.
Some
might say they're the same person, but one has a goatee, and it's the evil goatee,
it's the evil one.
It's his evil version.
He's working with the evil one the whole time.
There's one here.
What movie are you talking about?
We are talking about Spider-Man Enter the Spider-Verse. I think
Into the Spider-Verse.
Hands down, this is one of the great ones.
Yes.
Definitely the great ones. Like, I have a hard time finding anybody who would say this movie was bad or even just moderate.
I think I messaged you guys this. Hands down, and you just told you, it is the best Spider-Man movie.
No.
Easily.
Yeah. Bold
and
words.
For me, it is one of the best Marvel movies. It probably jumped into my top five. Obviously my top 10.
I mean, we can.
I agree with that.
We can nitpick exactly where it fits into all this pantheon, sure. Mm-hmm. But like, it's just so good.
Yeah,
it's so
yeah.
damn it's good.
From the bottom to the top.
Like I personally course, still Lisa, still give the.
I look.
Well,
look.
I still give the medal to Spider-Man 2 yeah. just because I personally think Spider-Man 2 is like perfect movie, but it's like. Holy shit. Like, I mean, who would have ever expected, like, and nobody thought like, when they first announced this that much of oh yeah. Well, it was that little thing that was hidden underneath the announcement that Sony and Marvel were gonna cooperate and they were gonna do these two movies.
They
mentioned that there was gonna be an animated Spider-Man movie too.
It broke because of the Sony leak. It was in the Sony leak.
Yeah.
The plans for this movie were there and people were like, come on, dog. There ain't no Spider-Verse Spider multiple Spider-Man movie. And it is. It's animated, but that should not detract. That doesn't detract from it at all.
No.
The problem, guys.
Yeah.
Okay,
they're working on it.
Okay, so
he's got the wires are contacting.
I know Brian says Spider-Man 2 is the perfect movie. I think this one is it. I did take my 5-year-old to this. I don't regret it because she absolutely loved it.
Really,
but there were a couple of parts I'm like, oh shit, fuck. So let's get into this with the from the beginning. We come into the world of Miles.
Yeah,
there is a Spider-Man in this world. It's not our world, by the way.
No,
because there's not Coca-Cola. It's like what is it? Cola Coke or something or Cola?
I don't know, but there was something like Inglewood was like the big area instead of like Beverly Hills or something.
Oh.
I saw a sign that was like the Housewives of Inglewood or something.
Oh, okay,
like, that's weird.
All right, but well, there's a couple other little things that we are clued into.
Yeah, I saw it in an Easter egg video where like they said all the stuff in the background where they had all that stuff.
Yes. Just pause. Miles Morales. I don't know where we left off. we had a little technical issue. So we come in the world of Miles Morales, and they introduce us to Miles, his dad, his mom, which I'm going to point out right now, and this isn't directly affect the movie, but he has mixed parents. His dad's black, and his mom is of some kind of Hispanic descent. So, Miles is of a mixed minority, and I think that's one of the things, one of the many things that I kind of just really love about Miles.
Sure.
There's a couple of things.
There are two. I mean, especially by being black and Latino, you know, there are two enormous communities of people who finally get to connect with Miles Morales. Well, I don't want to say finally. Miles has been in the comics for a long time
He's
now.
Been in the
but this is finally his movie
his
debut.
Movie, yeah. But this is the first time he was in a big movie debut. And so, this is the first time he's reaching
movie.
Out to
sure.
so many people that don't read comics.
And there's so many people who can connect with Miles Morales in a way that they never can with Peter Parker. You know, so it's
well, one of the things that Brian Michael Bendis had said when he you know. When they're like, okay, we want you to recreate Spider-Man, or we want you to do Spider-Man. He's like, okay, well, how would I do Spider-Man if he was introduced today? And I think all this is the most logical way. I feel for things like Miles he loves graffiti. I was like, oh my God, that is so cool.
Yeah.
They interact with this character, and he loves hip hop. And I realize this almost sounds pandering, but this is something that both those things are close, very near and dear to my heart. And you kind of just go with Miles. He goes to the neighborhood. He's like, he knows everybody. Like, he's obviously lived in this place a long time, his whole life. His whole young life, how do you say.
Well, he's also different from Peter in the sense that, you know, he's somebody who is very connected with his community. And, and frankly, he's cool. You know, Peter's a dweeb. Peter's a loner. Peter's and not that Miles isn't, but it's like, Peter's so much of a bookworm and so much of and that kind of affects his social life in a lot of ways. Whereas Miles is a very different character, and it's kind of refreshing to see not just, you know, that kind of representation, but that kind of take on.
I agree. That's one of the most beautiful things about this movie, because we've all seen 1,000 times over Spider-Man or every superhero's origin story that we know.
Yeah.
They did a new Spider-Man origin, and it felt fucking fresh.
Yeah.
I hung on every fucking little detail that they gave us. It was amazing.
Well, more than that, I think what is so amazing about this movie, and in a large part, you know, because we talked at length about, like, you know,
last episode.
Well, plus about like Sony's deal with Marvel, where with their live action movies they can't use Spider-Man, but they don't have any of those restrictions, and obviously those restrictions hurt Venom, but they don't have any of those restrictions in the animated category.
Set them free.
They set them free. And this movie, like, that's what floored me the most about this movie, is that this movie is such a holistic Spider-Man story. Yes, it is Miles' story, but
it's a new Miles, too.
Yeah.
It's not the Miles directly from the comic, because they did a lot of different things with him.
Yeah. This is definitely an alternate.
This is an alternate timeline. We should say that right up the front. There is a Spider-Man in this universe. His name is a... Peter Parker.
Peter Parker, yeah.
Yeah, because they mentioned that obviously his once he dies, his identity comes out. Yeah.
So rewind a little bit, because we see Miles and he's going to new school, and he's having a tough time. So he goes with his uncle Aaron, and he takes him to the subway, and they graffiti. They do a project together, and it's amazing. I love how there's a transition of hip hop where Miles is listening to Biggie. That's kind of his you get his vibe. It's younger, it's fresher.
Yeah.
And then when he goes with his uncle, he plays hip hop, but it's an older, like, from the 70s, 80s, and it's like you can feel it. But they're connecting, and they're doing a piece together, and then that's when Miles gets bit by a radioactive spider. We're not sure.
How did he not know that spider was on him?
Well, I think more than that, like, why does that 42?
I thought
42 several times.
Yeah, 42 is in the movie a lot of times.
What is up with that? Does anybody
know? So Brian Michael Bendis puts 42 in a lot
everything.
Of the Miles. Well, there is obviously that connection to Hitchhiker's Guide, but his
it is partly that.
Yeah, but his reasoning.
Yes, it is.
No.
That's what he put in there. That's what he said.
No.
We just listened to something where he did not say that.
Him, right? Okay. So Brian Bendis had he worked in 42 and.
Like.
No, Bendis.
Yeah.
The creator of
Brian
Miles
Michael
Morales.
Bendis. Yeah.
Yes. So in the comics, he worked in 42 a lot as an homage to Jackie Robinson. And so in that vein, Phil Lord and Chris Miller wanted to weave that into multiple times into this movie. So you see that on the spider. You see it there's a month when he knocked down something.
Yeah, he knocked down
some
numbers. The numbers were 42.
And
next
when he wins the lottery in the beginning, his number is 42.
Yeah, to get into.
Mm-hmm. I didn't catch that one.
I didn't catch that one either.
At the very start, right in the title sequence.
So the number 42 is a reoccurring number in this, but the spider had it on there, and the spider is...
It's an Alchemax spider.
It's an Alchemax spider, which is kind of cool because that's another. There's so many fucking little Easter eggs,
dude,
or acknowledgments to the whole Spider-Man as a whole.
Yeah,
it's a treat for anyone who loves Spider-Man, and it doesn't get in the way of the story.
You can really tell how much of a love letter is this Spider-Man, because I mean, and as much as it's superficial to say so, like that, seeing all the little things that when you see his dad going through his phone, or I think maybe it was his uncle's phone too, you see names of, you see S. Ditko, you see B. Bendis,
well,
you see S. Lee.
And Miles' phone, they were in there, and his dad's phone too when you see him. If you didn't know the names, you wouldn't catch your eye.
Yeah.
But he's down in the sewer, he gets bit by the spider with his uncle, and then he goes back and he basically gets spider powers, but he doesn't know how to use. And later on, he falls. No, he goes back to look for the spider. Did it disappear? I didn't catch that part.
No, it just glitches, because it's just like
Okay, because it's from another universe.
Exactly, it's from another universe. Yeah.
So he goes down there and looking for the spider, and he stumbles upon the fucking super collider.
Which I also love, by the way. He's totally not arachnophobic. Like, he just sees the spider, this giant spider on his hand. He's like. Smack.
Oh my god, that pissed me off so much. His giant spider just bit him, and he's all like, let's just get rid of it.
Well, he killed it.
Let's just smack it off.
He didn't kill it. Yeah, he
did
kill
blase.
It, which is... But, you know.
No, I think it's a thing. I think growing up in lower income is you're used to insects.
Spider.
Plus, also, it was a good comedic effect. Because you would think it would be like, or something like that.
I expected a slightly larger reaction.
But he killed the spider.
I had a bigger reaction to it.
So he went down to look for the spider. He finds the super collider down there and runs into Spider-Man and the Green Goblin. Fighting and stuff,
which I love that. Well, I mean, it's such a little bit that we get with that Spider-Man, but that's that was Chris Pine.
I didn't catch that when I was listening to him. I'm like, that doesn't sound like what's his name?
Johnson.
And it wasn't until I saw the credits. I'm like, oh shit, it was Chris Pine. Chris Pine.
Which means all the Chris's are now in the Marvels.
So he finds Spider-Man and him and Green Goblin fight. The super collider goes off. Basically, this is the part where, like, if you have a younger child, like, maybe this maybe wasn't the best idea. Kingpin finds a beat up Peter Parker, blonde, might I add.
Yeah, I think he's like broken his back at that point because he couldn't get up.
Before the collider explodes, though, Goblin pushes Peter into the beam, which causes the event to happen. The Spider-Verse.
That's right. His face gets like pushed in. Yeah.
Because they turned the collider on.
Yeah.
Well, to
it was a test to see.
There was a test. He's. I think they were supposed to stick the DNA of the dead
Vanessa. Yeah.
Okay. So, but instead, it got pushed Spidey in there, which called it to all the other Spideys.
Yeah. Which is kind of neat because like that's sort of the underlying reason why like Kingpin is doing all this. He's so obsessed with what went wrong with Vanessa that he's thinking that he can fix it like this and
just steal
and then Peter
gets
caught up in it and so
this is a different Kingpin, so it's I thought it was a little out of character for the Kingpin in general, but it's that they introduced him like that's fine.
I really dug this Kingpin though.
He was
Liev Schreiber.
Liev Schreiber was really
second time as a Marvel villain.
It was really good in this one. And then of course like it explodes and they find the bad guys find Peter down there and they fucking kill him.
It's so dark.
I was like, oh shit. Yeah. And I think my daughter was kind of like, what happened? Like she didn't. Yeah. Like, oh, I think they hurt him.
Well, tastefully, they don't show you.
I did that. I kind of had that reaction too. I was like, did they just kill him?
Fucking kill them.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then the next scene.
Yeah, like, and I can't
explain.
You can't explain
like,
that away
because
they have a fucking funeral for.
Yeah.
Quick rewind. How great was that moment where he and Miles connect? Because that's just that moment where he just suddenly realizes, oh my god, this kid has Spidey sense too.
Which I thought was really like he's like, it was almost like his unfound child's like, I'm gonna show you everything.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do. He's I'm like, gonna give you the world.
I can relate to something.
And like, then he goes and gets killed. And I'm gonna have to add to this Spider-Man is prime Spider-Man. This is like he's 22 or something like that.
Yeah.
He's
26.
26. I'm sorry.
Because it's on the news.
I saw it today.
Which means that he. Yeah. Which,
okay. Which I guess I'm glad you saw it.
Which means I guess he's been Spider-Man for about
10 years.
10 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. He's a young Spider-Man and he gets killed.
Yeah.
And he has a funeral and everyone's like, oh shit, Spider-Man's dead, but everyone's honoring him.
Yeah.
Which I was a little weirded out that there's no J. Jonah in this movie, but I feel like, I guess it's good because it would have detracted from
the
heaviness of this movie because there are parts in this movie like this where you're like, fuck, Spider-Man's dead, dude.
And especially just the way he like that he's defiant to Kingpin to the end, just like it just makes it hit that much.
He knew.
Plus, also, I mean, he knew he was gonna die. And this world was more of a world that where they really like Spider-Man. So I think J. Jonah would have been kind of like an opposite spectrum. Would definitely have to be an opposite.
It would have been an unnecessary character to have to detract from.
Yeah.
Which is the same because I heard rumors that Ice Cube was going to be J. Jonah. I'm like, that would have been cool.
That would have been a great casting, actually.
So I don't know if they filmed anything or they just didn't cut it.
Sequel.
I hope. Yeah, they don't need it.
Yeah. It's so much more.
He dies and Miles gets his powers and he goes as the Peter's this universe is Peter and he runs into another Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Which this Spider-Man is pretty amazing. It's hinted that it's our Spider-Man, but he's from our universe.
Yeah,
but
you actually
it's not
see on the screen it says Earth 616.
Yeah,
so it's a
you.
Subtle little way of saying like this is
it's supposed to be our Spider-Man,
the future Spider-Man.
Our Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
After Earth 616 is like the main Earth, so even though this is like, and they make subtle references to the.
Thank you for pointing that out because the 616 universe is considered the main Marvel universe. So you read a comic book. Almost all the stories are set in that universe. Mm-hmm. So supposedly that's where this Parker comes from. But I think it's kind of amusing because he's got a couple of gray hairs and he's pudgy. And everyone keeps pointing that out. And he's like, I fucking know. Yeah, but this is a Spider-Man that is. I'm not gonna say it passes prime, but he's
let himself go a little.
Yeah, he's let Spider-Man kind of like all the hits and stuff. Even though he keeps getting back up, like he's lost Mary Jane, he's buried Aunt May.
Yeah.
He lives in a fucking shitty apartment.
Yeah.
There's one beautiful part where like the little spider, the super collider portal's opening over his bed. And he's just like eating his pizza. Just like it's like normal, not normal, but he's like, well, fuck.
What's next?
Like he's expecting this.
Yeah.
And he turns into basically, and I'm fast forwarding through this. He turns because
he's lost Mary Jane at this point, right?
He's
divorced.
Divorced.
Like
There's a back part where he's showing him some of the papers,
and he knows it's kind of his fault, and it's kind of
yes.
And this is where
largely his fault.
They kind of reintroduce this part, they introduce this aspect of it they do this really cool thing in the movie. Whenever they introduce Spider-Man, they throw a comic book on the screen and they give you that person's like origin like that.
Yeah.
It's really, really a really effective thing that we're like, you can soak up this information without having to be like, but what? Like, they give you the answers and you can move on.
Well, not to mention that amongst so many other things, amongst the, like, also next to the fact that the animation style itself. We're not there yet. But I love just the ways that the movie evokes the comic book page. That you know, 100%. And not just the comic book page, but also comic book storytelling. Because so often, you know, we've all known about comics where we read through and suddenly they're introducing a character from some different arc and there's a little footnote saying, oh, read, you know, Brave and the Bold, mm-hmm. something, you know.
A little asterisk
in there. So it was almost like, you know, it totally works in the film to have these introduce characters and then suddenly this, oh, here's a quick backstory. Meanwhile,
because we get the first one with Peter Parker and he's like this beloved person. They've named a fucking popsicle. He's got a popsicle. He's got his own Christmas album. Yeah. And then the next one is like he does the same thing, but his life has kind of gotten a little shittier.
Yeah.
And they do this for all the characters.
And it takes into account that the general public seeing this movie doesn't know what happened with Uncle Ben and everything. It just needs to be touched upon, and we know the story.
I was bit by a spider. This person exists. This person doesn't exist.
Yes.
Let's go forward.
Yeah.
They do something that I think is really good. Is they don't really touch upon the great power, great responsibility. They kind of like, you know this already. We don't need to fucking push it in your face.
They kept interrupting it. Yeah.
There was that's why, because I think that at that point they realize that everyone's like kind of not sick of it, but they're like they know it.
Know
yeah,
it.
They don't need to be like,
well, especially the Peter B. Parker, the older Parker who's like where he's like, you know, like Miles
wearing fucking sweatpants.
Like, don't fucking say that to me. You know, like,
yeah,
but yeah, I love the sweatpants. It's sweatpants really, and bare feet.
It's so good. Anyway, like in the he tells like, you know, and they have the MacGuffin. What do they call it? The Goober.
The Goober.
So they, you know, they explain the Goober needs to shut down the machine. That's the crux of the movie, is that they have to shut down the machine. Of course, as they go along, they go to Alchemix, which, by the way, I was really, I don't get surprised at that much in movies anymore, but this one really got me. The scientist lady turned out to be fucking Dr. Octopus.
That shocked me.
What?
Too.
Oh, yeah. That is cool.
I picked up on it like right before the reveal, because before she was like, oh yeah, I'm Octavia. I was like, that'd be cool if she was Doc Ock. And then she's like, I'm Octavia, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, she's Doc Ock.
It was really cool.
I did not catch her name right away. So I it was total surprise to me.
Yeah, that was good.
Until he said, like,
I don't think,
because they go to Alchemix to steal a hard drive.
Say her name before
she says.
I don't think they do
because I think I would have picked up on that.
Yeah.
Anything Octave, you'd be like, I know what you're doing here.
Yeah.
But they didn't. I don't think they did. They showed her, and Doc Ock is a really, she got the really cool,
she's,
I don't know,
like
jelly,
plastic
arms.
I kind of dug that because it's like
they're not metal.
I'm not going to be able to reference anything, but I know I've seen those videos of like where they have those robotics with the bendable plastics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I could envision
that they're supposed
to send
in your body, that they can just kind of recycle the plastic by moving in.
Yeah. So I like that it looked like some sort of like organic plastic type of thing. You know, like something different, some different technology that Octavius figured out.
I like that they also referenced the Spider-Man sitting behind a desk in that scene. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah, I caught that.
He was sitting at the desk doing the on the
Google.
I think I was the only person that
I didn't catch it, but
laughing.
It was
hilarious.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they steal the hard drive and they go out of there. I guess I should back up that Miles is at a new school, kind of a preppy school, and he meets what is it?
Gwendolyn?
Gwendolyn.
Oh, she called her Gwanda.
Gwanda.
She started going Gwanda.
Gwanda. Gwanda. I'm from South Africa.
I'm from Wakanda.
They introduced Gwen. It's obviously her, but apparently she works at the Alchemix. I did think it was really cool, too, that as Miles is learning his powers, he touches her head, and his head gets stuck to her hair.
Oh, yeah.
And they cut her hair, and she has a fucking cool haircut. That's where she gets the cool haircut from.
Yeah.
Anyway,
true, she's forced into it. Essentially, there's a big handprint on her head.
Yeah, with her working at Alchemix, I assumed that was because she was going in there to steal a goober also.
Well, is that what it ended up being?
Because
it never said.
I forgot exactly, because I know she was there. She ended up being there earlier than any of the others.
Yeah, she didn't say, right?
She got there earlier, and so she was, I think she was putting things together.
So just so everyone knows, when the collider went off, as Peter's head got stuck in the collider, it called other Spider-Men from other universes, or Spider-People, I should say. Spider-People.
Yes.
Anyway, so they escape with they try to escape, or Peter B. Parker is teaching Miles how to web sling, and then Gwen comes in and kind of saves him in her Spider-Gwen outfit. Spider-Gwen, yeah. I think she calls herself Spider-Girl or Spider-Woman.
Well, in universe, yeah. She's Spider-Woman, which is also kind of weird.
But I like Spider-Gwen.
Because to us, she's Spider-Gwen.
I like, well, her
Spider-Gwen is not really a term.
No, but she is called Spider-Woman in her universe,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they tried to change it to Ghost Spider, but I could be mistaken.
She does mention that she's the Spider-Woman, though, in the movie.
Yeah,
yes.
The one and the only.
Yeah. And she's badass. And then they do her origin story, and she plays drums, and her world, Peter Parker, her best friend, got killed.
Yeah.
And they showed her being the lizard first and then dying.
Right.
But it's a nice little, because that's essentially the idea behind Spider-Gwen that they created, that she's the reverse of that Peter Parker died in her arms and she took up the mantle, So.
Which, when I first heard about Spider-Gwen, I was always like, ugh. This is so, like, I wanted no piece of it. It sounded dumb. And then you see her outfit, and I'm like, that's a pretty cool outfit.
It's pretty awesome.
It's a good design.
It's a really good design.
Even if the hood is entirely impractical, it looks so cool.
It
doesn't
awesome.
Matter.
It makes sense. Web swinging with the
hood. It makes 1,000% in comic books. Anyway,
Miles had a hood.
Capes are not very practical. Edna Mode proved that capes are not practical, but they look cool. So
Peter told him not to.
Exactly.
Yeah. He ripped the cape off.
There's a cape on this.
Which, by the way, I glossed over this part, too. Miles gets his costume from a fucking little store from Stan Lee.
Yeah.
And it's just basically pajamas.
Yeah.
Pajama costume.
I thought it was a bad costume.
Yeah.
Pajamas.
Yeah.
I really love what he says to him, too. Even though it's obviously referring to the costume, like he'll grow into it.
Right.
It felt like it was like a little bit closer to like he will grow into becoming Spider-Man.
Well, I'm sure that's how the line was meant to be written, even though they kind of killed it with the he's all. And then get the, what does it say, no refunds or something like that.
But even then,
they kind of break it in, what did you do?
But you get that poignant moment where he mentions that he's going to miss him. And, obviously, the audience knows who this guy is supposed to represent. So it's a little meta kind of, moment mm-hmm. that he has with the audience. And it's also just really touching that, they did this. They obviously conceived of that scene and did it well before Stan died, and it's nice that they went with a much more touching cameo with him, because up until now that's all his cameo, especially now that he's much more recognizable. He's certainly very recognizable now. Stanley's cameos have gotten more and more comedic because
they've always been comedic.
Not always. I mean, the first few cameos, like I know, like when you in the first Incredible Hulk TV movie, and then the first couple X-Men ones, he's just standing in the background, but
I don't know. I mean, he's sitting there watering his flowers, and the water goes up.
Yeah,
and was that X-Men?
Well, that was X-Men 3. Yeah,
the
X-Men movies tended to use him. In
he tries to save
cameos,
the little girl or whatever. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, well, but my point being that, like, I think it was really. It worked out in a kind of very poignant, and very fitting way that they wanted to go with a much more touching cameo with him rather than a comedic.
Well, I think they have the honor of being the first one post Stan's death.
Yeah, and it's but then given that he died, this is the first cameo of him post death, and it's just,
I think that's why it hits so hard,
and it adds so much more weight to specifically what he's saying too about how he's gonna miss the guy. And it's just,
I think it
made me tear up.
It did. It was a good part. Yeah. Anyway, we got it. From there on, I'm going to skip a couple parts. They go meet Aunt May, and they find out that they're not the only spider people there. They meet Penny, who has a psychic bond with the spider that lives in a
robot,
which I found out was created by fucking My Chemical Romance guy. Is that his name?
Oh, Jared Way?
Really?
Yeah. He did Umbrella Academy, yes?
Yes.
He did. He had a hand in a Penny Parker.
Oh, that's cool.
I had no clue of that.
Well, he started as a comic book artist and then
did
his band. Yeah, and now he's gone back to doing comics.
Oh.
I didn't... okay. They meet Penny. They meet Spider-Man Noir, which obviously a great character. My daughter kept talking about how the fucking... So he can't see color, right, Dad? So that's why he was like...
this is purple?
they gave him a fucking Rubik's Cube, and he's just like perplexed by this.
And
he
brings it back to his universe and shows it off.
Because his color... Because Spider-Man Noir obviously is the 30s Spider-Man who's he's a gangster. Or not a gangster, he fights gangsters, see?
And I love, what is it? Because he even mentions, anywhere I am, just wind is blowing. And there's even, all the subtle things, because, his wind is... always around him. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment later, like little details that I loved that stood out, like Spider-Ham later, at some point later in the movie, lands on his shoulder and his ears are fluttering because he's in the wind. Like he's
oh!
And we also meet Spider-Ham, who, yeah. which I think was, I'd almost see a movie of Spider-Ham. He was oh, fucking man. Great. And I don't know if you guys caught this,
John
but
Mulaney as Spider-Ham.
He they do the origins for all of them, but Spider-fucking-Ham isn't a fucking pig.
He was a human, right? Yeah. right?
No.
Yeah. No. No, he was a spider.
He was a spider bitten by a radioactive pig.
Yes.
Which we were dying. I was like, what? Which isn't obviously isn't the comic origin, but
No, that is the comic shit. Origin.
He wasn't a spider.
Yeah. I read up on that. He was a spider. Yeah. He was a spider bit by actually mm-hmm. his Aunt May, because Aunt May was a pig that had a spider in the basement.
So it's right. kind of like.
Oh,
Charlotte's
okay.
Web.
I guess that makes sense because he lived with she was like dementia or something it's in the
yeah,
comic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
She didn't know she didn't have a fucking a nephew, so that's why he lived with her.
Yeah, right. He just never told her.
Yeah, the thing about Spider Ham
so
is that
a sentient spider living with a human.
Like, no, he lives.
He became a.
No, they live in an animal world.
Yeah.
So Aunt May was another spider.
No, she's a pig.
Pig.
Aunt May was a pig.
In his
universe. She got like radioactive stuff on her.
Okay.
Then she walked up, bit Peter. Peter then turns into a pig.
Okay.
Spider pig.
She forgets everything and just assumes, oh, I had a nephew this whole time. Yeah. And he just never told her.
So he just lives with her.
But the thing about Spider-Ham is that
he's a cartoon.
Yeah, and the thing about Spider-Ham, I think part of the joy of him is that he doesn't make sense.
Yes.
And it's just incredible that he exists in this universe.
It is like it fucking they did a really cool thing.
He's Spider-Ham. Like why would he be named after like the meat version of his animal? Like
they did a really cool thing where like these three characters that we just mentioned have very distinct comic styles. Noir is this intense cross-hatching and darkness.
Yeah,
they incorporate it in the fucking movie. Spider-Ham's obviously a cartoon-esque character. Looks like a fucking cartoon character. Penny is fucking anime.
Style, yeah.
And her scenes are just like, ah.
It was, yeah.
You know?
Even with the three main characters, Gwen and Peter, they were a little bit different. Gwen had a little bit more of an extra blur on her.
I like that because essentially because she's from another universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that little subtle way of showing that. And plus, it's just I mean, also, how great is it that they can do that in the animated form too? Obviously, in the live action, you couldn't pull that off as well.
I guess it's the best part, better part than any other to mention. But the animation made me tear.
Yeah.
Like it was fucking gorgeous.
It's so good,
even used I forget the process was called, but back in the day when they did comics, instead of spending a lot of money on ink, they'd do
all the stippling.
Dots.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. That was
so
really cool.
That was in the movie too.
Yeah,
they did blurs. They did the internal memory. Internal thought words.
Yeah.
The comic sounds, which were kind of subtle but not.
Yeah.
When they did Thwip, you see Thwip on the screen, but it worked.
Yeah. It's funny, too. It's like I didn't catch all the Thwips the first time around. And then like the second time around when I saw it, I was like, oh, my God. It's perfect.
Fucking
yeah.
I mean, when you see
the
little onomatopoeias
pop
up like a comic page. Yeah,
the brooms or the wumps or they do freeze frames and they show like the screen move and it's like a comic book.
Yeah, that's a lot of what's great about this whole thing is that they treated this movie like a comic book. Right off the bat, there's that gag at the beginning, right after the logos, the Comics Code Authority page.
Oh, yeah.
This is like you're jumping into a comic book from somewhere between the 60s and 2000, and you're just...
This is a gorgeous movie. Yeah. Even if you're not a Spider-Man fan, which I know Lisa isn't, but you got to admit, like, the art style was fucking jaw-dropping. This movie's going to win an Academy Award. I don't know for what.
It has to be at least best animated movie. At the very least.
There's nothing. I haven't seen any better animators movies.
Yeah, no. What other movie this year was?
I mean, there was The Incredibles too.
This was better.
No, better.
This was a thousand times
Incredibles
better.
2 was a damn good movie, but I definitely give it this one.
Yeah.
This is one of those films where I like it, but I don't feel like I liked it as much as everyone else. Like, I had that with Inside Out too, where I really liked the movie. Mm. It's a good movie, but I just... Yeah. I'm at
Inside
a different
out.
Level with
and you know Inside Out too. Yeah. Okay.
And on some level it may well be because I know
but I'm not a fan of Spider-Man in general, so
yeah,
I think that's
I don't
part
think that.
Of it.
And I think and I think you're saying I mean you like the movie too.
Yeah,
you know,
it was good.
It's just that like obviously it's you know, because it's so much of a very well woven love letter to Spider-Man in general, it obviously speaks to well versed Spider-Man fans a little bit more on that level. But you know, but at the same time, like I don't know,
it's
I feel
a good
like
movie. I wouldn't recommend it to everyone if I didn't think it was just a good movie.
At its core, it's really funny. It's dramatic. There are moments I cried.
Touching. There's parts where, like, when 40-year-old Spider-Man, we're gonna because we're running low on time, we're gonna jump around to the end. There's a point at the end where Miles finally gets his costume and he finally realizes he can be Spider-Man because they're telling him like, "You're not ready. You're not ready." Yeah. There's a point at the end where he's sent in this other Spider-Man's home, and you know, the other Peter's like, "No, I'm gonna help you." Kingpin's loose, and Miles basically does this move that he did early in the movie. He's like, and he is going to hold him over the and send him back. He's like, "I got this. Like, you got to learn to let go." And like, this is very touching moment. Yeah. Then Peter B. Parker's like,
"To take the leap."
Yeah, he's like, "The leap of faith." And he's just like, "You got this." And he lets him go. And you're like, "Oh my God." And then Miles does. And he does. He defeats Kingpin the stupidest way, but it's like, it's a callback. He puts his hand and he's like, "Hey." And he does his little spider shot.
It was touching almost because of the fact that his uncle taught him that. Yes. The last thing that he saw him.
Yeah, we didn't even mention the Prowler, which my daughter was like, "Oh, dude."
Because
the Prowler ended up being his uncle, which, you know, fans probably knew that.
Well, that's interesting.
But caught on.
But that was the interesting thing about, like, how they presented that in the movie. Because obviously fans who know that his uncle's a Prowler already know that. But you see it through Miles's eyes. You feel it through Miles. Even the fans who know it, even the fans who are like, "Well, that's Prowler, so that when is he going to figure it out?"
So good.
But, you know,
and then they do the fucking almost unthinkable. And there's another spot. I'm like, "Fuck, maybe I shouldn't run the kid with this." They fucking shoot him.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They shoot him like, from, like it's like what? And I should also add, the Prowler was genuinely a very scary bad guy in this movie. Like the claws and the sound
when he's hiding from him.
I was actually in suspense when he was holding on Miles and was putting the mask back on. I thought he was going to kill
him. Oh, my God.
No. I didn't feel that at all. I knew he loved him. He was like...
No, he couldn't. He was trying to protect him.
But it was a good scene.
I know. I, like I said, I felt that suspense because I didn't know what was going to happen next. Because
you're thinking like, please don't let it go.
I felt like that a lot in this movie, even though I knew kind of where... It was fucking good.
But, dude, another tearjerker there, too. Like, especially when Jefferson Davis, like, finds his brother and realizes it's his brother. It just, Mahershala Ali's performance, too. Because he was really good. He was really good. I forget who the actor who did Jefferson, but he was damn good, too. But just that, when he finds him in the alley there,
It's an amazing movie, and, you know, we're leaving parts out. One of my daughter's favorite parts is when Spider-Man's leaving. He's like, "Here, take my hammer. It'll fit in your pocket." He's like, "No, you idiot cartoon."
Are you sure? It might. It's a cartoon hammer.
Hammer. He also left behind the anvil.
He did. They all had their... And I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but there's six bad guys in the movie. I'm like, those sly motherfuckers.
Oh.
Yeah, Sinister that was a Six.
Because I was thinking about I'm like, there was this.
There's Grey Guy, the Prowler.
Prowler, Kingpin.
Goblin.
Goblin's in there. Yeah. Octavius. There was one other one.
The Scorpion.
Yeah, the Scorpion guy that came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
The Scorpion King showed up and was all like, "Hey, guys," but didn't look like Zorak.
He was a Scorpion.
He's the Scorpion.
He's the Scorpion King.
Which I wanted to ask, were they the ultimate version? Like, from Miles, or are they different?
This isn't Ultimate Spider-Man.
This is kind of its own. I know it's not Ultimate. I'm just saying, like, I was wondering if they were, like, relative to the Ultimate.
I'm not familiar with Scorpion being Latino in any way.
Okay.
Oh, he is.
Is he?
Yeah.
Matt Gargan? He's not...
Oh, what am I talking? Well, I might be just thinking that because
the tarantula
Michael Mando plays him in
but the tarantula
obviously
not
traditionally he's been a white guy,
it's Matt Gargan.
Yeah, we're talking about that's not Hispanic.
Did they
change his name in Homecoming, or did they just is he maybe just Gargan by marriage or something?
I think he's just Gargan. Okay. Like, I think they just like
because Michael Mando is
Latino,
obviously, but
who knows? Anyway, Spider-Man into Spider-Verse, like. If you're a superhero fan or if you're just a fan of anything like this, go see it. It's a really good movie. It's a good movie.
And who would have ever thought?
Visually, good soundtrack, too. Oh, the soundtrack.
Yeah, this is one of those movies where I walked down, I'm like, mm-hmm. I was looking up on my iPhone.
Dude, I normally don't like hip-hop. I'm more of a rock person myself.
Mm.
But this one, I want to get the soundtrack.
It
hits me just at the right spot.
It was good. It was really good. They had me when they played Biggie, so I don't know what I'm talking about.
Who'd ever thought that two of the best, you know, superhero movies this year would be animated movies featuring Nicolas Cage as Superman and Spider-Man?
I really enjoyed Teen Titans, but I just don't feel like there's any animated. And I've seen a lot of animated movies, guys, this year. None of them touch Spider-Man. Not a single one.
It's yeah. I mean, I'll agree with you. It's certainly. I mean, in so many ways, it's such a revolutionary animated film, and
dude, it's and amazing.
It's, and it's just what Sony needs to be. Yes. Sony needs to keep doing that with Spider-Man.
Sony
not
needs
these Venom movies without Spider-Man
injection. And by the way, I could buy Venom for $10 because I went to go see Spider-Man.
I did see. I'm actually kind of glad I saw.
Nope. We don't have time for Venom. We gotta keep moving. That was Spider-Man, or our review of Spider-Man. Go see it. What
post-credit scene?
Oh yeah. I forgot. Yeah. Well, this is all spoilers, so we're okay.
Miguel shows up right at the end.
He's one of my favorite Spider-Man, too.
Yeah, and he's voiced by Oscar Isaac. Yeah,
which I was like, awesome. And at the end, I'm like, who did the voice of Pointing Spider-Man? Did anyone know?
I'm not sure. But I love, though, by the way, that
you stop pointing me. Don't point me while you're pointing me. It was
but
really
I also love
good.
It like, as a subtle thing that they didn't spoil it in the credits. Because post-credits scenes have been spoiled by credits sometimes because the credits will credit an actor and be like, wait, I haven't seen them yet. Oh,
no.
It must be in the post-credits scene.
Yeah.
So they said, like, I remember just watching the credits going like, wait a minute, Oscar Isaac was in it? As interesting person number two?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that way they didn't want to spoil it for you. So
it was really good. So Spider-Man's the 2099 is going to be the next one, along with probably Gwen and Miles.
And it was really also really touching to see the movie
and
dedicated to
the little device that he had to cross dimensions too.
Yeah,
well, so that's part of his shtick.
That was his purpose. Is they were building that so he could go across and talk to others.
In the current Spider-Man,
I don't know.
Well, let's say current, but the last couple of years, he's had a time thing to go back in time to be Spider-Man 2099 in our time.
Okay.
Because he's trying to change something with Alchem X, change the power. So he can go back and forth seeing what the effects are of what happened.
Okay.
And then it's a little risky.
And they could just as well work him into the sequel or something. Yeah. That'd be cool.
That's what I hope. Yeah. Anyway, we gotta stop.
But, yeah, but well,
beautiful.
To one other note,
go see
it. I do like that. I thought it was really touching that they devote a moment in the credits to just in honor of Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, who, I mean, they're Spider-Man's creators, and we both lost him this year.
It sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's what a great love letter to the character, though,
movie is a good love letter.
I mean, how great was
Stan.
that entire final battle? Feels like Steve Ditko. It feels like it's the backgrounds and the trippiness and that just like
I
oh
love that
God.
Final battle.
Yeah. Great movie. Go check it out. Let's move on. Lisa. Oh, no, me. I'm just going to mention this real quick because it was, and I haven't taken it down from Geek Pop. It was a big thing early in the morning. It fucking stupid ass Nick Frost was like, the Hot Fuzz 2 was greenlit. And everyone jumped on. We jumped on this. Not only for halfway through the day, fucking, he rehashtagged the post to,
I'm just messing with you.
No Hot Tip 2 and no Hot Fuzz 2. And he also, I didn't even mention this, but in the Spider-Man, there was a Shaun of the Dead 2 reference.
Yeah.
It was From Dusk Till Shaun.
Yeah.
And
Edgar Wright apparently worked into there.
So. It was he wrote, what's his name actually wrote it?
I heard about it. It has something to do with vampires this time, right?
He wrote it as a laugh. Like, never to be, he wrote it and it was.
Well, if it's From Dusk to Shaun, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Dusk
to Dawn, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's him and Ed.
Fighting vampires.
Yeah.
Although I got to say, in Nick Frost's defense, because I read about all that happened, I can easily see that he just, where it all started was that he shared an Instagram post of having lunch with Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
And they're just taking a photo together, a selfie at the booth. And then he just, I just picture in my head Nick Frost just thought, oh, it'd be funny if I just write hashtag, a Hot Fuzz 2 greenlit. But then he didn't realize, dude, there's the sarcasm doesn't come across on text. And suddenly the internet exploded. Hot Fuzz 2 greenlit. He's like, no, I meant that as a joke. I'm sorry. So
he didn't say that, though. He was like, his next one was like basically like this.
Deuces.
Yeah,
like,
but I think
you,
I don't know.
You twat. Yeah, you fucking mess with everyone's heads. I'm fucking hilarious.
If he did do it to fuck with people,
look,
then.
It's a dick move, but it's not going to stop me from seeing stuff he's in. So
I mean, Nick Frost is, he's funny.
Yeah, he's bodgy. Anyway, let's move on. Lisa?
We got a new trailer for Hellboy. Actually, I think it's the first trailer for Hellboy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With David Harbour. Which
I'm really split. How about you?
Right?
Yeah.
Like it's tough because look,
I miss Guillermo.
I love Guillermo's.
It's not even Guillermo. I think it's more on Ron. Like hearing Ron, not Ron's voice come out of Hellboy is really weird.
And I have nothing against David Harbour. I think David Harbour is a good choice.
No, nothing against him, even though I think he looks kind of weird.
Really cool. They had him with like horns and like a fire crown and shit.
That
looked really cool.
Yeah, in the first movie too.
Yeah. I don't remember that.
Well, part of it is also because
I'm sure they did. It's a cool scene.
I mean, you have to bear in mind this movie began within the studio as a sequel to The Golden Army, and they had wanted Guillermo del Toro to just produce, and Guillermo del Toro not only wanted to direct still, but he wanted the larger budget and his script for Hellboy 3. And then Ron Perlman himself said, I'm not going to do it if Guillermo del Toro is not going to do it. And then it evolved into this reboot, essentially. But I mean, but it's still involving Mike Mignola, which I love. You know, I'm like Mike Mignola. Look, he created Hellboy.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he's involved. He's still very heavily involved with the writing. Like, he's one of the co-writers of the story. But it still feels like, I don't know, like
the trailer to me looks more like the comic. But
it does, yeah. But I'm also a little, I don't know if I like... Not that, you know, Hellboy always has a little bit of humor in this, but I feel like they're punching up the humor more than I expected them to, considering, because Hellboy is, and especially since that money shot at the end where you see, like, his horns all flamed up and grown and everything, like, it looks like they're going into the whole, like, apocalypse storyline with him, and, like,
but he always does that. Like,
I don't know, I just would have much rather seen, obviously, Del Toro to do that story than just in a reboot, but... And I don't know, and it feels like nitpicky, but like, how do you guys think about like the prosthetics? Like, I think I think there's too much on his face.
He's got a weird eye, but that's on purpose.
I think like the eyes look good, but you know, that's it. Again, it's closer to what the fucking comic looks like.
Sure, but I feel like it's almost a little too striped because I feel like I hear the prosthetics when he talks, whereas you could hear it a bit with Ron Perlman. Because look, there's no there's no easy way to cake a lot of prosthetics on an actor and make them sound natural. But I don't know. I just feel like his cheekbones a little too much, and like
again,
I know.
It's like closer to the comics. I don't know.
But it's not like the humans look exactly like comic book.
I think it's the voice that is throwing everyone off because he's not Ron Perlman has his voice.
It's higher.
And David Harbour has more of a it's a lower kind of voice. So he's like, are you serious? Like when they ask him for his ID, it's not that high pitch. But
well, that first gag with him where he gets shot by his own people and he's freaking out over it, like he's I don't know. It seemed like a higher register than
maybe he's like a teenager Hellboy, even though he looks like an adult.
Well, that's what he was in the first movie.
Yeah, I know.
So,
but he didn't sound that
maybe
way.
More. Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe that is
or
what
maybe
he's
as like, he gets older, he's his going voice gets tired.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a voice that's personally throwing me off. I think the rest of it looks fine.
It looks fine. It just,
and it's got Mila.
It's just one of those things. It's like I really like Guillermo's version. I really like Ron Perlman, and it's sad not to see it, but
especially
I don't think it will stop me from seeing this.
No.
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
So Hellboy, I don't know.
But it's also cool. Like we got like a little bit of Ben Daimio speaking, and like he's British. Or it sounds like he's British.
Is he really
sounds
British?
Like a lot of people are British in here.
Well, Daniel Day Kim playing him. He's American. Because the BPRD isn't the BPRD in America.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think they might be setting. I don't know if they're relocating the BPRD to obviously they're in the UK at some point in the
there's
movie.
There's no Abe and there's no Liz. So there's just Broom and it looks like a.
But it makes me kind of curious about Ben because all the controversy about Ben Daimio's initial casting with Ed Skrein, like. Because in the comics, he's Japanese-American. I guess they've made him a Brit, which I think all the more for it. We need some.
He wasn't Asian British Brit. in the comic?
No, he was a Japanese-American. But I'm curious if maybe that's why they initially cast Ed Skrein, because Ed Skrein's English, and they're because not a lot of Asian actors do accent work, so they're thinking, oh, we'll just get a British guy without realizing,
Brian,
shit.
That's racist.
Well, they were racist for casting
Brian, it's not that hard to do an English accent. Right?
But still, it's like a...
We Brian, do an English accent for
English.
Us.
No, I can't.
Oh. Why?
See, it's just him.
You just proved your own theory, goddammit.
No,
we got to move on. Let's move on. Let's skip this next one because we don't have time to.
On to they released the cast list for.
Let's not bring it down.
They released the cast list and also the character's name for Dark Crystals.
And I didn't put it in there, but the characters, some of the character pictures.
Yes, the character pictures.
For the Dark Crystal new TV series.
Prequel
series?
Prequel.
Prequel.
Mm-hmm. It's a prequel, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is, yeah. They very said much it was a prequel.
Before
I mean,
the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, it's about how the Skeksis and the...
And there's also more
with the Trade Federation.
And plus there's more...
Huge with the Trade Federation.
What if it was like that? Would you be pissed? Like some kind of political...
What? No, I'm not opposed to that. Like, I mean, I think it kind of worked in episode one. It just got a little schlocky with the...
And besides...
The meeting scene. And
in the last movie, they were the last Gelfins. Yes, thank you. They were the last Gelfins in that movie, and which obviously we're seeing a bunch more in this one.
Good, because, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's before then.
Yes.
Well, I don't know what to say. The cast includes
Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill.
Simon Pegg.
Didn't have it in front of me, sorry.
Because he's not supposed to be one of the main characters. I think they're just announcing that he's going to be. Well, Mark Hamill.
They put him up front, though.
Put him in something, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's Luke it's fucking Skywalker.
Mark Hamill.
Yes. You mean he is. They have a bunch of...
Well, they had Helena Bonham Carter in there. Yes. Eddie Izzard was in there.
Yeah. Andy Samberg.
Yeah.
Katerina Bailiff.
Oh, Alicia Viklander was in it.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Natalie
Bomer.
Yeah.
Her name on there. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So they've got a pretty fun cast going. Yeah. This isn't much, but I just thought it was kind of interesting that they're putting some relevant star, but not
well,
relevant.
Even just that first. Do you see that little trailer with that first look of?
No.
Well, you see like a glimpse of one of the puppets, and just like, oh my god, it looked. I mean, it's just.
Well, I've seen. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just great that they're doing so much, great kind of puppetry work, new visual effects with Dark Crystal. Because Dark Crystal, like, even if for those who are probably more familiar with Henson's more famous works, like, Dark Crystal was his passion project. Like,
I feel like Dark Crystal's up there, it's just a little maybe darker.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
But
still, there was a scene. there's that scene that has always stuck with me where what's her name's getting hidden from by her mom, and her mom turns around, they just kind of reach in and take her.
Oh, yeah.
Very fucking traumatizing to a kid.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, Dark Crystal, what is this, next year? Comes out next year?
I think they just said 2019.
2019.
So no official hard date.
Yeah, 2019, no hard date.
So they just released the cast. That means they're probably just starting to get into the episodes. Probably sometime, I'm going to guess in the fall.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this has a real potential to be something.
I agree.
Great.
What else do we have?
How many other puppeteering kind of stuff do we see these days? So
I don't know. Sorry, I don't have that information in front of me. Brian, what else do we have?
Oh, yes. So that's me. So so there was some scuttlebutt started on Making Star Wars, I think was the first one to report this. They had a source saying that the production of Jon Favreau's The Mandalorian, which is apparently sharing the same studio space as the people working on Avatar 2, they're sharing a lot of the same technology within that same studio. Like basically they're working on a way to basically show, like, they're obviously improving more and more ways to pre-visualization. So they're doing these they're using the technology to show live CG, live like kind of basic CG onto the frame as they do it, as they're shooting basically. Yep. And according to one of these sources from Making Star Wars, somebody spotted that they were doing that with Sabine Wren's helmet.
Which I've said this before, there's obviously continuation of Rebels. This makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, like...
have you seen all of Rebels?
Yes, I've seen all of Rebels.
And Sabine, she could easily... Not only could she easily be, in the series, age-wise, but I mean, there's even people speculating that maybe that's who Gina Carano is playing.
Well...
Ooh, she'd be the right age. Gina Carano's in her mid-late
30s. To reiterate, at the end of Rebels, it takes place, the very ending is after the...
After Jedi.
Yeah. So, the war's over, and Sabine's like, I'm going to go look for fucking...
what's his face? Ezra.
For Ezra, because he's out there in space. So that's when the next part of the story takes place, which in the same timeline is The Mandalorian.
And... she's a Mandalorian.
She's a fucking Mandalorian.
It makes perfect sense that she would be in The Mandalorian. And she's not only a Mandalorian, but she's famous. I mean, she is famous.
She wielded
the Darksaber.
She wielded the Darksaber, which is not something, that's been done for very many years.
Sure. And you know, don't read too far into this because this is just a report that the helmet was on the set and they could have just been using it for tests and stuff like that. But it would make perfect sense.
I think it'd be a great
to
thing.
Actually be in this.
As a side note, I also had this IG-88's been spotted on set along with the casting news of Nick Nolte as an Ugnaught.
Yes, Nick Nolte. And did they mention Ugnaught?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So you mentioned that technology, there's a technology where he's going to be voicing an Ugnaught. He's not going to be playing an Ugnaught.
Interesting. Yes. I didn't hear the Ugnaught part. Really interesting. Okay. Well, I know they announced officially the full cast, and there's like Werner Herzog is going to be in it.
I don't know. I just thought Nick Nolte's an Ugnaught was reaction.
That's
worthy.
Great. Yeah. Well, because he's got that. Well,
I'm Nick Nolte.
It's interesting picturing
cigarettes.
That voice coming out of a tiny little pig guy.
Eat nails.
Like I can't do his voice because he's got this
growl, almost a growl of voice.
Yeah. So good. So
look,
fucking.
You look right now like you could pick a Dixie. Well, what's that thing he says in like?
What?
That line from Hot Fuzz. What's the movie with the Vietnam?
Oh, Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder, when he's like, I bet you couldn't find a Dixie Coon skin with an Ohio hooker holding your prick and showing you the way.
I wonder if he ever read that
like,
and was like,
what?
You know, people laugh, but I think he did a really good job in the Hulk movie. I love that.
Oh, dude.
I love that scene he had with Bruce at the end when they were both shackled.
Yeah.
So good.
That movie gets too bad a rap.
I agree.
And that also uses the comic book page on screen very well.
I think so, too.
Yeah, which obviously Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse.
A lot of people know. We got to talk about that after. Yeah. But all right, let's move on. It's Lisa, you have a lot of Nintendo news for us?
I do. So you can finally get your hands on Yes. Well, I mean,
just you.
If you sign up for a Nintendo Switch Online. But if you sign up for the Nintendo Switch Online, you have access to buying some NES Classic controllers
for the
Switch. Which, yeah, I was kind of like, this, I don't need this.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Until people finally got them, and they're essentially like Joy-Cons skinned as Classic controllers, which is kind of amazing.
You can attach them to the side of your Switch as Joy-Cons.
And play games like
that. They're $60 for two, which I'm like, well, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah, you can. But the best part of it, obviously, is you can play the free games that they're giving you.
Yeah.
With the Classic controller, which that's the best way to play.
And these are the ones that are just like, I mean, obviously they're NES cartridge replicas, but they slide into the Switch.
No, they're NES controller.
Oh yeah, controller replicas, but they slide right into
them. They slide in like a regular Joy-Con.
Yeah. When Lisa and I were looking at
them, I think a little bigger than the regular Joy-Con.
I would hope so.
They looked a little bigger.
Because the old ones are no bigger than a fucking iPhone 4 or something.
Yeah, they're pretty
tiny. The size, I mean, now I don't know. But the size of the Switch, they look very much bigger on the side. So I don't know. I just thought it was kind of neat, right? Like, this is something I would consider buying now.
When we got it, we really didn't know what we were getting. We just thought we were getting Classic controllers. Yeah. So to see that it's $60 for Joy-Cons instead of just controllers, it makes it a little easier to be like, oh, if I need controllers or if I want them, like, that's not a bit. That's
no.
There's more of a purpose to them.
Yeah, they sound like an easy sell.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a Switch.
Yeah.
And we all have Switches.
Yeah. Well, talking about easy sells, you cannot find, or you're going to have a hard time finding the NES Classic and the SNES Classic because those are no longer in production. Yeah. And after this holiday season, if you can, essentially what's on the shelves right now is all that there will be.
Now, to be fair, didn't they already pull the NES Classic once?
No.
The Super
didn't it run out
NES
once? And they brought it back?
So they ran out.
Yeah.
They didn't stop. Okay. They didn't officially stop production, though.
Okay.
They were just like, this is all we're going to make for Egg now. I guess that is the end of production. Yeah. But they didn't. This is officially like they're not going to make
these
anymore.
End of life, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense because they're getting the online going for the Switch, which is why I never bought them. I was like, I'd rather just play these on my Switch.
I still kind of want them, even though I have absolutely no real need for them.
I mean, the fun is the novelty of having that miniature version and playing it like the old style where you
I have a tiny Enrique and Nathan got me a Raspberry Pi.
I thought you were about to say a tiny Enrique.
Well, it's like funny. So I got the Raspberry Pi NES with all the Super Nintendo and Super Nintendo games, like every one of them, on the emulator. I don't know if I should say that. It's fine.
Too late.
But every time you boot it up, it has a... These numbnuts fucking made a splash screen of him and Nathan as Super Mario and Luigi.
Oh,
so it's
awesome.
Like it comes up, and I forget what it says, but it's pretty cool. So every time you pop that on, they're like,
hey.
Got their mouths
probably
open.
Not think it's funny.
When will that one be on the market?
Yeah. So you can't find them anymore. If you want one, they're really good. I think the biggest coolest feature on the besides the save states is I think they have like a rewind feature, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't remember.
No,
rewind?
It could be.
Yeah.
How so? Like,
so
just go back to where you were earlier in the game.
So there's a button that you just map it, and it literally rewinds the play.
That's cheating. You couldn't do that on the original.
Well, listen.
There's a lot you can.
I agree with you to an extent, and I don't really. Well, I've used it. So
plus games back then.
Just recently, I bought the Nintendo. The Disney Afternoon Collection, which is like Darkwing Duck, both DuckTales 1 and 2 from the NES, Tailspin, and I think the Chippendale 1 and 2. They are tough games. Like, they're tougher than I remember. Still doable. But, you know, I'm playing this with my kid, and, like, it was I was going to pop a vein.
Some of those classic trying to watch NES my kid games play this. Were like, did you ever play the original TMNT?
Hmm?
The dam
hated
bridge?
It.
With, oh, my
hated
God.
Game. Had it.
How did they think
kept
that kids
it.
Weren't,
don't know why.
Like, we're going to be able to beat that level. It's just,
my point
so
being, watching the kid play DuckTales and continue dying, I'm like, oh, but you have the rewind, so she can just rewind it, worse and die. And,
nice.
You know, I don't know if it's because she's been playing video games with me for so long, but she got pretty good at DuckTales. And I was like,
wow.
It's shocking to see a fucking five-year-old navigate some of these levels that even I had a trouble as like a fucking eight-year-old.
You're getting old, man.
Well, that's beside the point. Anyway, NES and Super NES classics, get them while they're still
get
here.
Get them while you can.
All right. Real quick, I thought it was interesting. I said this a while ago. There's a Star Trek and Transformers crossover in the comic. Mm-hmm. Well, they just introduced what we've been waiting for, and to some extent or another, a transforming starship.
I love its name, too, the Fortress Tiberius.
Tiberius, yeah. Well, it's because what happens is through some, you know, comic booky way, Kirk had to maneuver the spaceship, so it's a transformer, so his consciousness is kind of in it, so
yeah.
He took the form of the Enterprise, and he was able to transform it, and he's fighting like the bad guys, and it's, yeah, Fortress Tiberius,
you're right, it's a comic book, and yes. It's a mashup of two universes, you're not going to throw a lot of, like, realism into this,
no.
But I just kind of laughed when I read about how it happened, because it created the Enterprise out of Kirk's memories.
Yes.
So I'm like, does he remember every room? And
yes.
Like, it just remembers all the rooms that he frequents. So it's just like,
well, it was.
It's
yeah.
Just got gaps.
It's just exactly all the bedrooms.
Maybe the future had better memories. It was a Transformer ship that was like derelict or something. Yeah. So, you know, comic booky,
yeah.
But Star Trek, it always works. Like, I have a Star Trek X-Men comic book and a Star Trek Doctor Who comic book, and they're fucking great.
And it's just a really fun design of the Transformer. You can see, like, NCC 1701 on his chest, and then the nacelles are on his back. They look like wings, almost, like, the way, like, it's just
cannons,
a cool,
I don't know. It's a very, very good design as far as, like, G1 Transformers go.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. If you've been reading it, it's fun. If you haven't been, like, go to your local comic book store, get a couple of issues. I think there's only like 4 issues or something like that. I don't know.
So Kirk's like in it?
I think they're still in the
cave. His mind is controlled.
Something like that.
I have to say, because I also looked at it and was like, is Kirk in the cockpit? Because if he is, then he's facing down.
He's a headmaster.
But then again, the gravity, I guess, can be.
Sure. Yeah. All right, we got one last fucking topic, which I was going to put at the top of the show, but this is kind of stupid. Have you ever wanted your house to smell like fried chicken, Brian?
Yeah, you know how I do that. I get fried chicken.
Okay, well, fuck you, and Enrique. I have an easier way. KFC, well, I think they're sold out now, but you can buy a log, a fire, like, fire log,
that
log, burns and smells like fucking fried chicken, which, come on, who doesn't want that? It smells like the original 11 herbs and spices. Mm. Make you want to eat fire.
That's a great idea.
I think it's an interesting idea. I just don't know, like,
I mean,
how chickeny it smells. Because let's be honest, ain't nobody want their house to be like, fuck, it smells like chicken in here.
And also, I feel like it makes a little more sense than, like, because I think it was last Christmas or a couple Christmases ago, the crispy chicken smelling sunscreen. Which I think is
that.
A little weird. Yeah, but it was one of their.
Why,
like,
the fuck?
This one clearly took off more because I think it makes
sold
more
out.
Sense.
Like, it's sold out.
Well, apparently there's sunscreen.
It was only
too,
$18. I was going to buy it. I was like, oh, maybe I'll buy it. I'll buy it tomorrow.
Yeah.
It was sold out in a day. It was gone.
Not shocked.
Maybe
they
you can make your
only
own.
Got like 5.
Well, I'm sure they probably like, no one's going to buy it.
Make roll your own. Fruit. Just get a piece of firewood and roll it in the.
Throw your chicken on there.
Yeah,
spices
in
11
herbs.
Or better yet, just get a bucket of chicken, throw it in the fire.
You got the 11 herbs and spices formula, right? Just. Roll it
off. Well, I've only got half of it. I can't tell you who has the other half.
That's right. Dude, that's a damn secret.
That's a damn secret, Brian. And
Colonel
we don't
have to kill you.
We don't devolve that kind of information. Okay, That was a Geek Pop. It might be for the year. I don't know if we're going to be able to record next week. We'll see.
No, it's the end of the
year. Next year is the end of the end of the year for us, and it is the day after Christmas, so we'll see.
If we don't hear from us again, Happy New Year.
Well, if not, I'm glad we had a Spider-Man episode, which takes place of our Star Wars episode. How about
that's
that?
That's right, yeah.
So,
where's our Aquaman?
If we don't get to... we'll talk about it later. All right. we'll do it the next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right, we gotta go. Fuck, Brian, stop talking to me. That was Geek Pop for this week, possibly this year. I'm Big Chris.
Brian.
Enrique.
And your Twitch has just been flipped.